O king, this time factor enhances the sattva guna. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is the controller, he favors the demigods who are mostly situated in the sattva guna. Then the demons who are influenced by tamoguna are annihilated. The Supreme Lord induces the time factor to act in different ways, but he is never partial. Rather, his activities are glorious. Therefore, he is called Urushrava, purport by his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham sarvabhuteshu namedveshosti napriyaha. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be partial. He is always equal to everyone. Therefore, when the demigods are favored and the demons killed, this is not his partiality, but the influence of the time factor. A good example in this regard is that an electrician connects both a heater and a cooler to the same electrical energy. The cause of the heating and cooling is the electrician's manipulation of the electrical energy according to his desire. But factually, the electrician has nothing to do with causing heat or cold, nor with the enjoyment or suffering that results. There have been many historical incidents in which the Lord killed a demon, but the demon attained a higher position by the mercy of the Lord. Putana is an example. Putana's purpose was to kill Krishna. Aho bhakiyam stanakala kutam. She approached the house of Nanda Maharaj with the purpose of killing Krishna by smearing poison on her breast. Yet when she was killed, she attained the highest position, achieving the status of Krishna's mother. Krishna is so kind and impartial that because he sucked Putana's breast, he immediately accepted her as his mother. The superfluous activity of killing Putana did not diminish the Lord's impartiality. He is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of everyone. Therefore, partiality cannot apply to the character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always maintains his position as the Supreme Controller. The Lord killed Putana as an enemy. But because of his being the Supreme Controller, she attained an exalted position as his mother. Srila Madhva Muni therefore remarks, Kale kala vishaya pishta dehadi karanatvat suranikam evastitam sattvam. Ordinarily, a murderer is hanged. And in the Manu Samhita, it is said that a king bestows mercy upon a murderer by killing him, thus saving him from various kinds of suffering. Because of his sinful activities, such a murderer is killed by the mercy of the king. Krishna, the supreme judge, deals with matters in a similar way, because he is the supreme controller. The conclusion, therefore, is that the Lord is always impartial and always very kind to all living entities. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1, entitled The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. Text number 12. Parikshit Maharaj, very, very deeply thinking in regard to the nature of the Absolute Truth. He was not only a great king, but he was a learned scholar and a surrendered devotee to Krishna from the time of the womb of his mother, always looking for Krishna everywhere and in everything. So someone like Parikshit Maharaj does not accept anything superficially, but wants to understand everything in regard to Krishna, the world, and the purpose of life with very deep substance. And of course, as the king, who is inclined toward always living in the service of other living beings, he's not only asking for himself, who is going to die within 7 days, but he's asking for the benefit of others. Because many people will have these questions. Krishna has spoken in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham sarva bhuteshu na me dveshrosti na priya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. That I envy no one. I'm partial to no one. I am equal to all as the best well-wishing friend. So, it's easy to hear that, but then when we see Krishna acting in certain ways, it doesn't seem to harmonize with what he's speaking. He killed Shishupal, and he's protecting the devotees. In fact, historically, he has killed so many demons and protected devotees. So how is that partial? Impartial. So Parikshit Maharaj is not willing to just, you know, hear and accept. He wants to understand. And Sukadeva Goswami is here and explaining how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be impartial to everyone, equal to all, and appear to show very special favors to some, to reward some and punish others. Through material nature, which is activated by the time factor, which is controlled by Krishna. Krishna acts in miraculous ways. Everyone is controlled by time. Can anyone stop time from moving on for even a second? Has there ever been such a person? Even in all of our scientific laboratories, we can send Sputniks and satellites into this outer space and reflect all kinds of signals, and it can be... I remember a couple of years ago we were in Italy, Rome, and there is a place about an hour from Gaurmandala Bhumi. Do you know what the name of the place is? It's a forest. It's a beautiful forest that hundreds and hundreds of years ago was inhabited by Christian monks who were in recluse. They would live in caves and little kutirs in the forest and do their bhajan, their worship. Would you like to know the name of that forest where all these Christian monks used to come to do their bhajan in seclusion? The name of it is Calcutta. Oh. Calcutta.
So the devotees asked me, do I want to go to Calcutta that morning? I said, yes, of course. So they took me to this forest. And one nice devotee, Roman devotee, he knows I like caves because he... So he inspected this forest and found this incredible cave. It was a spacious cave with a high ceiling. There was about three of us, not three of us, there was about 30 or 40 of us who went, and we all fit comfortably in the cave. It was very hot outside, but inside it was like air conditioned, very cool. It even had three rooms, a main hall, and then two side rooms. It was a 5-star cave. So in that cave we were having Bhagavatam class. And actually I was just speaking about the glory of caves. Because it was so nice. Just how natural it was. We had to walk about an hour through just dense forest to get to this cave. And I was talking about how so nice. We're in the forest and just the birds singing and natural cooling of the cave. And we're completely away from all modern technologies. We didn't even need a microphone or anything, because the acoustics were so excellent. So I'm just going on and on about how it's so nice to be in such a natural surrounding, away from all the passionate scientific technologies of the modern world, and we can just be here just like the sages of ancient times were gathered together in a cave to hear about the glories of Krishna and his names. And just when I was speaking like this, someone's cellular phone began to ring. Happened to be the temple president, too. Cellular phone was ringing. Can't escape. So yes, you know, modern scientists can create such satellites, and they can create such incredible technologies, computerized mechanisms. You can build big dams to control mighty rivers. But can they and will they ever be able to stop time from moving forward, even for a second? Does anyone have that power? Power, the river of time, how it flows. You can pull the plug out of the clocks, but time carries on. You're still going to age the same way, no matter what arrangements they make. That is the power of time. When Krishna manifested his Virat Rupa in Kurukshetra, he showed even Bhishma and the greatest, most powerful beings on the planet were being devoured by his mouths. And what was this form? Time I am, the power of time, devouring everything, everyone. One of the scientists that created the first atomic energy, when he saw how it was being utilized as a bomb in some desert in the western part of America, that was his first thought, because he was a student of the Gita. Time I am, destroying everything. So yes, Krishna is all powerful. Krishna is time. In this material world, time is his energy under his control. Krishna actually has the power to stop time anytime he wants from acting. He has the power to make time act in any way he wants. That is God. God is great. To understand the intricacies of the greatness of God is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. How Krishna is creating time and how Krishna is controlling time is one of the external factors of Krishna's greatness within this material existence. So, all the actions and reactions of karma that are affecting everyone's lives, all 8,400,000 species of life, are simply living out the reactions of past karmas. And whatever they do in response, in the human life, of course, the lower species are simply just living out the reactions of their past karmas. And a human being is given the opportunity to take responsibility for everything that he or she has done in all previous lives and respond to the reactions by taking shelter of Krishna. That is the most intelligent activity in all of creation, is when one's good or bad karma come upon one, one responds by taking shelter of Krishna in a grateful and devoted spirit. So in this human life, how we respond to the karmas we have created is going to determine our destiny. And it is all being activated within the realm of time. Time activates the three modes of material nature. Time activates the whole system of karmic laws. Time is activating everything within this world on the mundane plane. And the spirit soul, entrapped by this materialistic consciousness, is on every level completely being controlled by time. But there are stories of how Krishna, just like in Kurukshetra, when Abhimanyu was killed by the Kurus, Arjuna was so upset, he was so disturbed when he heard that Abhimanyu was killed by unfair means. He decided that if I don't kill Jayadratha, who was the person who penetrated through, who was the person who stopped the Pandavas from entering into that circle of Kurus to help Abhimanyu, if I don't kill him by sunset tomorrow, I will enter into fire. Hare Krishna. Now when someone like Arjuna speaks, his word of honor is more precious than his life. Truthfulness was considered so sacred that in previous times people would die before they would lie. That was the integrity. Sometimes even demons were like this. Before they would speak something, you know, they were honest about being demons. But they weren't, even though they were so demoniac, they still had morals. They had ethics. You know, they would kill the Brahmins and suck their blood and rape people and all that kind of stuff. But they wouldn't lie. Because it was just such a dishonorable thing to do, to not speak the truth. In fact, of the four legs of religion, cleanliness, austerity, mercy, and truthfulness, in the age of Kali, the only thing that is feebly remaining is truthfulness. It's really the last leg of religion that's somewhat stable within the world today. So being truthful is very important. Therefore, Arjuna, when he said this, he declared this, that means 100%, nobody doubted, he would never change his mind. It was simply impossible for Arjuna to go against his own word. And that is why when Krishna wanted to Chipram bhavati dharmatma shashvas chantim nagachchati konte aprati janihi name bhakta pranashyati api chet sudaracharo bhajate mamananya bhak sadhur eva samantapya samyag bhavishito hisha. Krishna says in Gita that even if my devotee engages in abominable activities, if he's sincerely striving, then I will protect him. He's to be considered saintly. I will lift him up. I will lift him up from his condition and bring him to perfection. And then he tells Arjuna, you declare this boldly, that my devotee will never perish. And our beloved Acharyas explain, why did Krishna tell Arjuna to declare it boldly? Because when such a devotee says something, it absolutely must be true. That was the dignity, the integrity of a Vaishnava. So Arjuna says, I'm going to kill myself by entering fire if I don't slay this rascal, Jayadratha, who is responsible for the unfair death of my son by sunset. So you know the story. The Kurus heard about this, and they were very happy. They had millions of soldiers, and every one of their soldiers, they only had one concentrated service that day, to protect Jayadratha. And Arjuna had to pass through miles and miles of solid soldiers who were just trying to keep Arjuna away from Jayadratha. Is that possible? To get when an entire army is just trying to keep one man away from another man? Very difficult. Krishna told Arjuna, why did you say that? You know, this whole battle is for Dharma. Why did you have to say like that? Anyways, let's get up early tomorrow morning. So when the sun rose and they blew their conch shells, he just charged and all the armies were there. Dronacharya, everyone was there to stop him. And Arjuna was fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and Krishna was, the horses were so tired that while Arjuna continued fighting, Krishna went and took the horses and got them water and then brushed them and spoke nice words to make them happy. And then, and then he got back on the chariot. So Jayadratha was just practically in the horizon, so far away, and the sun was actually setting. And there was thousands of soldiers between Arjuna and Jayadratha, blocking the way, so Arjuna couldn't reach him. So what did Krishna do? Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra to cover the sun. And not only that, but he stopped time. He actually kept the sun right where it was. Now, who in this world can stop the sun? Even a very difficult situation. Stopping time is one thing, but time is measured to our senses by the movements of the relationship between the sun and the earth and the moon and so forth. So Krishna actually kept the sun right where he wanted it. Just a sliver of the sun was left on the horizon. Just a sliver was there, and then he covered that with his chakra and told Arjuna, now send a crescent moon-shaped arrow to cut off the head of this Jayadratha. And Arjuna said, but the sun already set. He said, just do it. Sarva Dharma Paritrasya. You just surrender. So, but he said, but don't let it fall to the ground. Send it to the Himalayas where his father's in meditation and have his head fall in his father's lap. That was a mysterious order. So he sent his weapon. Meanwhile, the Kurus were celebrating. The sun had set, disappeared from the sky, and they were just, Arjuna has to die. Arjuna dies mean they're going to win the war. There was no hope of the Pandavas winning without Arjuna. So they were celebrating and dancing and singing and embracing one another. You know how people are when they are victorious, Kshatriyas. And then all of a sudden they see this arrow. Jayadratha's head's cut off and it goes flying into the horizon. They just watched his head flying away. It's quite a scene. And what happened? You know, everyone just immediately reacted. Arjuna cheated. Arjuna's untruthful. Arjuna's a liar. That was the immediate effect. Even the Pandavas were shocked Arjuna could do something like that. But then Krishna removed his chakra, and the sun was still there. It was still there in the horizon. It was still there. And a few seconds later, it went down. What happened? So that is Krishna. He is the controller of all controllers. Thus, when we surrender to Krishna, then what do we have to fear? But Krishna, although he is controlling all of this material existence, through his energy of time, he is controlling it in such a way that he is personally remaining impartial to everyone. He's ultimately everyone's well-wisher. It's like a father may be impartial to his children, or a mother may be impartial to her children. They love them. They love them all. Now, if one child is very, very affectionate and obedient, then the parents are just going to be embracing that child and just playing with the child and doing so many nice things with the child. Yes? And another child has the same opportunity but is a rascal and is stealing and is lying and is causing pain to others. Now the parent loves the children equally, but is going to show his or her love to the child in a different way. It's not going to say, oh, very nice, come. It's going to say, today, don't go out of your room. They may even spank the child. They may chastise the child. That's a sign of their impartiality. They're just doing what's best for each child with love. But Krishna, Aham Bija Pratapita, he is the supreme perfect father, the eternal father of every living being. And he loves all living beings. So according to how we are living, according to how we approach, the Lord through time, through karma, is arranging the perfect situation for everyone's welfare. And this is our faith, that whatever is coming, even through the laws of karma, is ultimately for our welfare. It is controlled by Krishna. And to prove this in a most extraordinary way, Krishna performed this lila with Putana, which Srila Prabhupada is elaborating upon within this story. Putana was such a ghastly person. She was really the ultimate serial murderer. She was a terrorist. Speaking about innocent people, her special, what is it called, a forte, as far as terrorizing, was killing newborn babies. And she killed thousands of them. She would kill them. She would drink their blood and eat their flesh. Monster. Oh. And plus she was 12 miles in size. So I guess those babies were like little candies for her. But she was a mighty asura. And she was such a mystic yogi that she could disguise her form and make it any size and any shape that she wanted. Can you imagine if someone was like that was at large in the world today? And who could possibly stop her? She was more powerful than the entire U.S. Army. In fact, all the Allied forces put together could not subdue Putana. That was her power. So what to do? Even the demigods with their armies could not subdue her. They trembled in fear at the thought of Putana, this ghastly female witch who had these terrible mystical powers. So she disguised herself with all her potencies as a very beautiful lady, human size. She came from a very powerful family of demons too. She was the older sister of Bakasura and Agasura. That's quite a family, is it not? Agasura assumed the shape of a snake 8 miles long, whose mouth was from the clouds to the ground. That was her little brother. And then there's Bakasura, who appears like a gigantic crane, whose body was bigger than a mountain. And they were all associates of Kamsa. He was their leader. So Putana comes in, so she was so beautiful that the Brijabasis, including Yashoda Mai, they were thinking that it must be some damsel of heaven that has come to bless our Gopal. Maybe it's a goddess of fortune that has come just to give mercy to our Gopal. So she assumed a form and a apparent disposition in which she attracted the complete faith and trust of all the inhabitants of Gokul. It's quite amazing. Because when you put your faith in someone, you're very vulnerable to benefits or heartbreaks and harm. Yes? It's very, in the world today, people have been cheated so many times. It's hard to put faith in people. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes tell us like this. He would tell us that we would attain perfection if we just had faith that he has not come to cheat us. Yes? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, explained that this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. Because as long as there is this false ego, janasya moho yamaham mameti, thinking in terms of this is... I am this body, and all things in relationship to this body are mine. As long as we have that egoistic misconception of I and mine, then there's always a potential conflict between myself and every other living being. Because they're also thinking in terms of I and mine. So it's a very, very volatile situation, this material existence. Therefore we see there's so much crime, there's anger, there's people breaking each other's hearts, there's people killing each other, there's wars based on religion, wars based on nationalistic pride, wars based on territorial conflict. There could be wars based on practically anything. Just one little mistake, one little misunderstanding can create massive wars. So, that is the nature of this world. So, to place your faith in someone is a very serious subject. Now, Putana, although she had the most evil intentions, she had already killed thousands and thousands of babies, drank their blood and eaten their flesh, and so many other people. But now she wanted to kill Krishna. So she came in, and Vishalakshi disguised herself in such an attractive way. These are the Brijavasis. These are not just some, you know, ignorant people, you know, working in coal mines or something like that. These are the Brijavasis. These are the highest elevated transcendentalists. And she fooled them. She was really expert. But she had smeared this kulakala, this very powerful poison. This poison was like blazing fire to anyone who touched it. She put it upon her breast with the intention of feeding Krishna the milk of her breast. He would immediately die. Yes. So evil. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Putana represents false guru. False guru means someone who is teaching their own ideas in the name of God. Just like Prabhupada explains that Krishna has spoken in Gita, Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru mam evaisya shishatyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me, you will come to me without fail. Of course, throughout Gita he is saying, me and I. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all material worlds. I am all the source of all spiritual worlds. Everything is emanating from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Matta parataram nanyat kinchid asti tananjayat mai sarvamitam protam sutri manikana iva. There is no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. This is the continuous chant and teaching of the Gita. Krishna is talking about me. And what is false guru? One who says something different in the name of God. Prabhupada was reading from one Gita, and it said when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean me. He means the unmanifest, impersonal, supreme within him. If Krishna meant that, he would have said it. But he says me. That means me. I was speaking the other day. I was in Jaipur a couple years ago, a guest of someone, and they had a Gita, an English translation of Gita with purports. So I wanted to see what is it saying. So I turned to that verse, because that's the verse you really can understand, you know, what people are talking about when they're talking Krishna. So this particular commentator is saying, he actually really encouraged me at the beginning. He said that many commentators of the Gita have a misconception that when Krishna says me, always think of me, worship me, offer your homage to me, become my devotee. They are explaining that this means the unborn, unmanifest, impersonal, all-pervading, supreme within Krishna. But that is not correct. So I was thinking, oh, maybe he read Prabhupada's Gita or something before he wrote his. I was thinking, here's a bona fide translation of the Gita. This is wonderful. So I continue reading with great excitement. He said, it doesn't, when Krishna says me, he means me, Krishna. Does that sound good? Then he continued. And who is Krishna? Krishna is Guru. And whoever is Guru is none different than Krishna. So when Krishna is saying, always think of me, worship me, you must surrender to Guru. And I am Guru. The commentator is saying, I am Guru. Therefore I am none different than Krishna. I am one with Krishna. And if you surrender to me, then you will fulfill the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So I closed the book. So what this means is we're taking the milk of transcendental knowledge, but we're mixing the poison of our own speculations and concoctions. And that actually poisons people's consciousness. It actually kills their inclination for loving service to the Lord. Mayavadi Vasya Sunilai Hoy Sarvanasha. Lord Chaitanya said, if people hear these ideas, their propensity to love and serve Krishna is ruined. So we must be very careful. So Putana, she appeared in the most wonderful way. And she attracted the complete faith of the Brijavasis. They had such faith in her that they handed her helpless little baby Krishna, who was at that time only one day old. She took that baby, and they were thinking, oh, how fortunate we all are that such a special person is taking, blessing Krishna. And right in front of everyone's eyes, she began to feed Krishna milk from her breast. And the Brijavasis loved Krishna more than they loved their own lives, and they just allowed her to do it. That's how much faith they had in her. But Krishna knew exactly what she was doing. In fact, when he first saw her come in, he closed his eyes. And the commentators explain many reasons why he closed his eyes. One of them was, oh no, the first demon I'm killing is going to be a lady. Supposed to protect ladies, not kill ladies, but what to do? It is explained she was like a most dangerous dagger in a very very ornamented, nice case. She looked nice, but she was death personified. So little baby Krishna began to suck, and he sucked, and he actually got milk out of it. That's Krishna. Just like the swan can take can separate the milk from the water. Yes, well, Krishna, she was filled with poison, but he just separated all the poison out and just drank her milk. In other words, he took the good quality within her. And even though she had no other intention to kill him, somehow or other, you know, she did for a moment, you know, feel some motherly affection for him as he was sucking. Very well. That's the power of Krishna. So he sucked and he sucked, and then with his little hands, he just squeezed. And it was so painful for Putana. She was trying to get Krishna away because he was sucking. He sucked all her milk out, then he started sucking her life out. And with his little tiny fingers, he was squeezing, and it was really painful, so she was... She was screaming and she was trying to get Krishna off, but she couldn't. So she ran outside of the house, went into the pastures, and resumed a form that was 12 miles high. Now, how high do the jet airplanes fly these days? Does anyone know? Jet planes go 8 miles? Commercial planes. So that means she was 1.5 times in the sky what the airplanes fly. That's big muttage. Can you just imagine that size? You know, you look when the airplanes, if an airplane was 12 miles high, and you look down, you know, you don't even see anything. That's what Krishna was seeing. He was so high up. You know, if she's 12 miles, that means where her breast is was probably about 8 miles. So she was huge. And the amazing thing is Krishna didn't grow. She just expanded, and she wasn't a beautiful goddess of fortune looking lady anymore. She was horrible. She was just a Rakshashi demon with scattered hair and big fangs and distorted in every sense. This is a monster. But the amazing thing is Krishna didn't grow. He remained the same size. Can you imagine what he looked like in proportion to her? And he was still sucking her breast. It's just like an insect on her. And he was just... And squeezing so hard that she was just like in mortal pain as he was squeezing, and she was sucking, and she was screaming out with a tumultuous voice, "Child, leave me! Child, leave me! Child, leave me!" And ultimately, Krishna just sucked her life force right out of her. And she just, her eyes rolled back, and now a 12-mile demon, and she wasn't lightweight either. It's not that like she had a nice figure and all that. She was just a grotesque demoness. She just fell to the ground. The whole earth shook. Earthquake. So even, you know, when the World Trade Center fell, the whole earth didn't shake. But Putana, when she fell to the ground, the entire earth was... That was her weight. That was her power. And she laid there. And Krishna, who was still the size of a little 1 or 2 day old baby, was just crawling around on her breast, which was like a mountain. And Yashodamai and the Brijabasis were so much disturbed what happened to Gopal. And they went running over her body, running. It's 12 miles run. And they climbed over, and some of the gopis picked up little Gopal and brought him down and took him to Yashodamai. And they were thinking it must be due to our past pious activities, because we have planted banyan trees and dug wells in the ground. Therefore, Lord Vishnu has protected our beloved child. Or perhaps it is because Krishna is good, because he's pious, he's innocent, that the Lord protected him. They couldn't understand. Krishna would not allow them to see him as anything more than their helpless little child. So yes, this incredible story of how Putana was killed, a ghastly, blood-sucking, Rakshashi demoness. But what happened? Did she go to hell and suffer for all the thousands and thousands of children she killed? Did she go to hell for the aparad of taking Krishna away from the Brijabasis with the intent to murder him? Putana went back to Godhead. Not only did she go back to Godhead, but she was given the post of one of the assistant nurses of Yashoda. to act in the love of a mother for Krishna, eternally, with no falling down. For the rest of eternity, she's going to be in the ecstatic position of one of Krishna's loving mothers. Why? It's great. It's amazing. This is Krishna's impartiality. This is Krishna's mercy. He saw the good in her. Even though she had so many evil intentions, she did approach him as a mother and give him some milk. So Krishna purified all the bad of her. It's not that she got off. It's not that she just smiled and went back to Godhead. She was screaming in incredible pain. Actually, the concentrated amount of pain and humiliation that she suffered from this little baby defeating her cleansed her of all of her previous sins. He taught her a good lesson. Yes? So first he cleaned all of her past sins and made her suffer intensely, concentrated misery and a lot of embarrassment too, because she was a really puffed up person. To be defeated by a little baby? It's very, very crushed her ego, crushed her mind, horrible pain to her body. Yes? But actually, it was all good for her. It was all the medicine that she required to neutralize the effects of all of her sins and all of her wickedness. This is actually the way a soul, we first must clean away all of our anartas, all of the unwanted things, and then what's left is our natural desire to serve and love Krishna. And one of the best ways of cleaning away these things, we may have our opinion of what God should do or shouldn't do to make everyone nice, but Krishna knows best. And that's what the whole laws of karma is about. It may appear very gradual to us, that may be so many lifetimes of birth and death before we finally learn our lesson, but from the point of view of eternity, it's not much time at all. Krishna sees in terms of eternity. Krishna wants to give people the opportunity to really make the free will choice to surrender in love. And the laws of karma is to facilitate the conditioned souls to ultimately come to that conclusion. Therefore, material nature is actually wonderful, because it's all created for only one purpose. For Krishna to extend his mercy to all living beings. Everything that exists is an extension of Krishna's love. When a parent punishes a child, the child may not understand how this is good for him or her, but the parent knows that it is. So this material creation is actually an extension of the material energy of the Lord. It is the Lord's mercy to the conditioned souls. He descends within this world again and again and again to teach us and to invite us back to his abode, back to his loving service. But at the same time as doing that, he's inflicting so many reactions to our misbehavior so that we'll ultimately learn a lesson. So why is it that a devotee who sacrifices so much of the pleasures and joys of materialistic life to actually serve the Lord, why doesn't Krishna just take him back to Godhead? Why do we have to suffer like this? Temptations and diseases and frustrations. and disappointments. Have any of you ever had any of that experience? Why? Why does Krishna do this to his devotees? Because Krishna wants us, by our own free will, to really, sincerely, honestly, earnestly take shelter of him. Give our hearts to him. And actually, this is what it takes. When the Lord personally appears sometimes, he does things in a very quick and incredible way, like with Putana. But actually, the amount of pain that Putana suffered in those few minutes was equal to what we may have to go through in thousands of births. He just did it all. Special mercy. Hare Krishna. But another thing we should understand is when Krishna comes personally, he performs such incredible miracles. Lord Chaitanya would just glance on someone and they would, all their anartas would disappear and they would become ecstatic devotees. But he performs these pastimes just to show the potential of his mercy. But then he gives his teachings. And he gives his devotees who act as Vaishnavas and Gurus. And he tells, now if you want to attain the same perfection, you have to work for it. If you're all completely dependent on my mercy, but you have to actually, your heart has to be willing to be transformed by your own free will. Completely, not half-heartedly. In the heavenly planets, see, what devotees would like is that they could be devotees like the people in the heavenly planets. Yes? We could chant, and we could dance, and we could do seva, and we could worship the deity, and there's just no problems, there's no sufferings, there's no need for ISKCON communications to clear up all these inconceivable deviations that go on. Yes? We're thinking, why? Why isn't this like the heavenly planets? Well, everyone in the heavenly planets are devotees, but it's so nice. There's just no problems. There's no disease. You don't get bronchitis and AIDS and cancer and heart diseases and you don't need spectacles to see. Did you ever see a demigod with spectacles? They just don't need them. It's so nice. And everyone's nice. You know, sometimes the demons attack, but then Krishna personally appears with his chakra and makes everything all right. But there's a problem. Would you like to hear? The demigods who are serious, they're longing to take birth on the earth planet. Because things are just so nice there. You just end up a karma mishra bhakta or a jnana mishra bhakta, dharmasya, what is that? Dharmasya hipavaragyasya naratata yopakalpate narataisya dharmakantasya kamalabhaya hismrita. That although they're doing service to Krishna, they're getting so many benefits. But when there's so many benefits, it's impossible practically to not enjoy those benefits. And they're enjoying such immense benefits. We know the story of Maharaj Katvanga. He helped the demigods. They offered him benediction. They would have given him residence in the heavenly planets. But he only wanted to know one thing: when am I going to die? They said, in a moment. Where did he go? Did he stay in the heavenly? He was in the heavenly planets. Within that moment, he just shot right down to the earth and remembered Krishna and went back to Godhead. Because it's very difficult to remember Krishna in the heavenly planets because it's just so nice. Yes, it's just so nice. It's what we'd like ISKCON to be. But by Krishna's mercy, it's not like that. Because if ISKCON was like a heavenly planet, we'd just be happy devotees birth after birth after birth. Yes? But to go back to Godhead, you have to take shelter. You have to understand the need, the desperation for Krishna's mercy. I'm helpless. Yes. So therefore, this earth planet is very, very conducive to actually go through the transformation of totally giving our heart to Krishna by our own sweet will. Samashita ye pada palava plava mahatpadam pundi yashomurari. That the spiritual world should be our goal, not this place where padam padam bhavad padam padam yadvi padam natesham, where there's so many dangers, so many problems. And when we speak about dangers, it doesn't mean just car crashes and things falling on your head and bacterias in your body that can just develop into all kinds of diseases, but also dangers in our own, in practicing morality, ethics, and Krishna consciousness. There's danger at every step. Prabhupada said, unless we have a healthy fear of Maya, we will be defeated by her. Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, at least as much, if not more, he speaks about the sufferings of material existence as he does the joys of the spiritual world. Yes? We need to hear it. We need to be alert. Maya is powerful. There is danger at every step. And the sufferings that come upon us are Krishna's mercy. For a devotee, the mercy is coming somewhat direct. Krishna knows what our karma is. And he can erase it all in a second. But because we're not completely surrendered, or even if we are, Krishna may want us to really go deeper and deeper into that surrender and not change our mind. So Krishna just allows the karma that we are due to continue to get us. But it's not just the automatic system that the materialistic people are undergoing. Krishna is actually monitoring it in such a way that he's giving us our karma so that it will have the best effect of giving us the best chance of freely, independently giving our free will to Krishna in his service. That's his kindness. That's his love. So yes, the happiness and the joys of this world are Krishna's mercy in that sense. So Putana, she was given position of mother. Such an incredible stroke of Krishna's mercy. And he's giving everyone that same opportunity. Jagai and Madhai. And for all of us, there's a story in Chaitanya Bhagavat of Gadadhar Pandit. He was approached by his dear friend Mukunda Dutt. Mukunda Dutt's from Chattagram. Chattagram is in Bangladesh. He migrated to Navadvip to be near the Ganga, along with his older brother Basudev Dutt, who we spoke of last night. So Mukunda Dutt came to Gadadhar Pandit and said, I know you always like to meet very pure-hearted Vaishnavs. Someone has come from Chattagram. His name is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. You'll be very happy to meet him. So Gadadhar Pandit is very eager. He says, yes, please take me. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi had just arrived. He had a beautiful house. And Gadadhar Pandit came in, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi very graciously welcomed him. Mukunda Dutt said, this is Gadadhar Pandit, the son of Madhava Mishra, and he has been a very strict brahmachari from his birth. He has never had any interest in enjoying anything of this world. He's completely devoted to Krishna. And that was Gadadhar Pandit's nature. He was a real renunciate. And after the formalities of greeting each other, Gadadhar Pandit was just studying how Pundarik Vidyaniti was living. He was on a beautiful sofa that had costly silks and nice pillows, silken pillows all around him to make his softness to his body. And there was a canopy over his head. And there were mirrors all around. And he kept looking at himself in the mirror. And he had finely combed hair. Not only combed, but it was very well oiled with extravagant perfumes. Yes. And he had silken clothes and ornaments on his body like a prince or a king. And he had all these little vessels all around him, brass vessels. And they had water and different nectarine drinks. And he was chewing on betel leaves. So Gadadhar Pandit, who's just a simple brahmachari, is looking at him thinking, what kind of Vaishnava is this? I don't understand. Why did Mukunda Dutt bring me here? So Mukunda Dutt understood Gadadhar Pandit's mind, although he didn't say a word. So he wanted to show what kind of a great soul Pundarik Vidyaniti was. So he chanted a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It was a verse of Uddhava. In the Bhagavatam, when Uddhava learned that Krishna had left the world in deep separation, he was offering beautiful prayers to Lord Krishna, remembering Krishna. And in his remembrance, he was crying out, no one is as merciful as Krishna. He is supremely merciful, supremely kind, supremely loving, supremely forgiving. And what is the evidence? That the sister of Bakasura, Putana, came with a poison to feed Krishna, with the intent to murder him. But because she came in the role of a mother, Krishna accepted her as his mother. He accepted it. He just saw the good in her. He erased all the bad and sent her to the spiritual world to be his eternal mother. Who else can we take shelter of than Krishna? Now, doesn't this story give us hope? If Krishna can do this to Putana, I mean, who are we compared to Putana? What is our sins in comparison to Putana? They're insignificant. Even if we want to be great sinners, we can only be insignificant compared to these people. They were like maha sinners. So that gives all of us hope that Krishna can give Putana entrance into the spiritual world as mother. Who else to take shelter of than this Krishna? Who else can we put our faith and our hope in than Krishna? So when Mukunda Dutt sang this beautiful prayer of Uddhava, Pundarik Vidyaniti began to think in terms of the power of Krishna's mercy and love and went into ecstasy and started crying out, who is more sinful than me? He was so humble. Who else can I take shelter of than Krishna? And suddenly, torrents of tears started pouring out of his eyes, like rivers. And his limbs started trembling and his hair stood on end. And then in his ecstasy, he just started crying out in humble appeals to Krishna. Then he started rolling around and he started ripping to pieces his clothes and his ornaments and everything else, and the whole, his pillows and cups and everything was flying in all directions. 10 men tried to hold him down. Because he always had people doing chamaras and peacock fans over him and everything. All the people, they started trying to hold him down. And all these 10 men just went flying in all directions. And he was just rolling around and just screaming out for Krishna's mercy, Krishna's names. And ultimately it came to such a crescendo that he just blacked out and went unconscious. There was not a single symptom of life to be seen in his body. There was no heartbeat, no pulse, no breath that were visible. And he lay like that, in that state of samadhi, for 8 hours. And Gadadhar Pandit was watching. And he was thinking that I have made an offense to him in my mind. I thought he was just an ordinary materialistic person. But now Mukunda Dutt, he said, you have saved my spiritual life. You have revealed to me what a great devotee he is, the nature of his ecstatic love, the way that I must atone for my offense to him is I wish to accept him as my spiritual master, take initiation from him and give my life in his service. So when Pundarik Vidyanidhi finally came back to consciousness and looked around, and people were trying to make everything look all right, but it was all in shambles. And he looked around and saw what he did, and he was a mess, and he was embarrassed. Because he didn't do it. It was just beyond his control, his ecstatic love. So then Mukunda Dutt expressed to him that Gadadhar Pandit wishes to be your disciple. He wants to take formal... Gadadhar Pandit has told me that although he's been a devotee his whole life, he has not yet accepted formal initiation from a guru. He wishes to accept you. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he's so humble. He replied by saying, only after many, many births of engaging in devotional service does Krishna give such mercy to give one a disciple like Gadadhar Pandit. That was his expression. Only after many, many births of devotional service can one get a disciple like Gadadhar Pandit by Krishna's mercy. So then they set a date for the initiation. Actually, Gadadhar Pandit then went back to Lord Chaitanya and told him what happened and asked his permission to take initiation from Gadadhar Pandit. Lord Chaitanya said, yes, yes, fix the date, very good. Of course, Gadadhar Pandit is Srimati Radharani, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi is Vrishabhanu Maharaj, the eternal father of Srimati Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan. So it was a natural relationship. He accepted him as a spiritual father in this world, and he is his eternal. He is her eternal father in the spiritual world. So this is how the great devotees of the Lord appreciate this incredible pastime of Krishna's impartiality, of being the well-wisher of every living being, Putana. This story gives the great Vaishnavas so much hope in Krishna's impartial mercy to everyone and anyone. And to apply this principle to our present life within this world is wisdom. Tateinu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmikritam vipagam ridbhagvapurvirvatatam namaste chibete samukta sate sadaya bhagam. Therefore, even when difficulties come to a devotee, devotee thanks Krishna and takes shelter, however inconceivable the difficulties may be. It's inconceivable to our very tiny little jivatma consciousness in a conditioned state. But to Krishna, everything is working. Everything is being orchestrated in the most perfect way for every living entity to have a chance to perfect their lives. If we just have the faith and the association by which we can see it that way and take the opportunity and become perfect. What does it mean for us to be perfect? To take shelter of the perfect. That is perfection. In and of ourselves, what is our perfection? Our perfection is only that we're part and parcel of Krishna, who's all perfect. Om Purnamata Purnamidam. He's perfect and complete. When we take shelter of our relationship with the Supreme Perfect, by His mercy we become perfect. So by hearing such wonderful stories and association of devotees with faith, we can continue on with great hope, seeking the mercy of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And this class about time went over time. Is there any questions? Rukmini Devi, would you like to speak wisdom from your heart to enlighten all of us? Hari. Maybe it wasn't mythology, maybe it was history. But what is important is to understand the relativity of our conceptions of what is possible and impossible. And then to try to appreciate that for God, who is absolute, there is no relativity of what is possible or impossible. Yes? If Krishna can float all these planets in space for so many millions of years. Yes? That is the power of God. He can create the sun planet. He can create the whole solar system and keep everything in such incredible, precise order for so much time. We can't do that. Yes? It's impossible for us. And what is the difficulty for Krishna to kill, to create a 12-mile demon? Huh? Is that anything surprising? Actually, the universe is preposterous. And we accept it as existing, do we not? You know, science can say what they like, but they can't figure out how a little seed becomes a baby, can they? I mean, how does that happen? It's preposterous. A little seed goes into a mother's womb and all of a sudden it becomes a baby. And they can explain the different changes, but how it's happening, why? Huh? It's mystical, it's miraculous. The movements of the sun and the moon and the earth, they can explain it in certain ways, but it's quite preposterous, is it not? It's like Prabhupada gave the example of the frog in the well. A frog is living in a well. And for him, the amount of water in that well is just huge reality. And then another frog just jumps in the well, sit next to him. And he says, you should see where I have been. He said, well, where have you been? He says, I have been to the Pacific Ocean. So, well, how big is the Pacific Ocean? He said, as big as my well. He says, you don't understand. It's how can you tell the frog in the well the amount of water in the Pacific Ocean when all he's seen since his birth is that water in the well? Yes? Practically impossible. I'm sure that frog probably told his friend, this is just mythology. This is preposterous. So much water. Yes? So we're in the well of our own relative experiences within this world. So things seem preposterous and impossible and mythology and all of this. But see how God has created everything within this creation that we see and that we live in and we accept as reality. And the person who does that, if he wants to have wonderful pastimes on earth and make big, big demons and everything, is that a problem? What do you say? Huh? So if we understand the greatness of God, then we understand nothing is impossible for Krishna. When Krishna in his original form descends from the spiritual world to this earth, he's going to do something wonderful. Otherwise, why is he coming? Right? He's going to do pastimes that for the rest of time, people are going to be saying, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Krishna, you are wonderful. So it's not that he's going to, you know, go on the subway to work 9 to 5. I mean, who cares about a god like that? He's going to lift Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand and just hold it up for 7 days and fulfill all the desires of his devotees. God comes to the earth. What is he going to, you know, have a little can of Raid and you know, kill an insect? No, he's going to kill Agasura and Bakasura. Yes? So he comes to the world to display the unlimited, incredible, inconceivable powers and glories of the Lord to attract our hearts back to him. Yes. I mean, if you know, these basketball players who jump up and throw the ball, you know, we can't do that. But does that mean they're mythology because we can't do it? No, somehow or other, they have certain karmas where they're able to, and they work hard and they can do it. So Krishna If someone can jump up and put the ball in the hoop, which is what nobody else can do, then what if Krishna wants to show his athletic abilities? He's God. So the more preposterous things seem to be, the more devotees become ecstatic with faith to see how Krishna is doing it. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shows his universal form. And that's pretty preposterous for a materialistic person to conceive of. Yes? A person with thousands of heads and thousands of eyes and thousands of legs, and the sun is his eyes and the moon is his eyes. And he's seeing all the oceans and the mountains, and he's seeing devatas. Yes? And what is the Virat Rupa? That's just an insignificant material manifestation of Krishna. Yes? When Krishna personally comes in his original transcendental form, janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tattvata, tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti sorjuna. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world never takes birth in this material world again. Krishna is just wonderful. He can do anything, in any way, at any time. But everything he does is always an act of his impartial love to all living beings, to attract our hearts. We must understand protection to be beyond just the physical body. Because whether you're martyr or not, you're going to die physically, yes? Whether you die of old age, or whether you die of martyrdom in your youth, is there really all that much difference from the point of view of the eternal soul? What do you say? Like in the instance of Ladini Devi, she was not willing, her integrity was so deep and so pure that she was not willing to just stand by idly when a Vaishnava was being offended. So she just knew, she knew 100% she was going to die, but she would rather die than stand by idly when devotees were being offended in this horrible way. So in a heroic mood of humble service to the Vaishnavas, within a second she was gone. Yes? And we believe she went back to Godhead, giving her life in that way, chanting the holy names. That's a lot less painful than, you know, old age, is it not? It was just in a flash of lightning, she's with Krishna. Old age is pretty violent. Your eyes are failing and your limbs are failing and your organs are failing and you can't think very good and you can't talk very good and you're racked with pain. Yes? And then you die. So, you know, crucifixion may suffer for a few hours, but if you give your life to God, you go back to Godhead. So really, when Krishna says he will protect his devotees, he's not just, he may protect the body, but that's not what real protection is. The real protection is that devotee doesn't forget him at the time of death. That devotee, progressive spiritual march continues. So if these devotees go back to the spiritual world, or they take a better birth for serving Krishna, depending on their particular consciousness, Krishna is protecting them. He's protecting the most valuable thing that they have, which isn't their body, because the body they have to lose anyway. He's protecting their aspiration, their ideal, to serve the Lord and to love the Lord and to be with the Lord. That is true protection. So yes, Krishna will always protect his devotee. Whatever spiritual advancement we make, even if we do something abominable, he protects whatever we've invested. Yes? Whatever spiritual progress we've made will never be lost. He protects that forever. And if we give our hearts to him, he will take us back to Godhead. Whether he takes us back to Godhead like Jayananda Prabhu, or whether he takes us back to Godhead like Ladini Mataji, or whether he takes us back to Godhead like perhaps some of the martyred Christian saints, or whether he takes us back to Godhead in either a conceivable or inconceivable way. Yes. Who was it? Maharaj Kulashekar. He prayed, "Let me die young." Yes. Now that when I could chant the holy names with a clear mind and clear consciousness, let me die now when I'm young. Rather than old age, I don't know, I might lose my memory and everything. So that's an important verse. Ultimately, a devotee, whenever Krishna takes us, we'll never take our own life. Whenever Krishna takes us, we should be ready. However Krishna takes us. So yes, Krishna promises to protect his devotee. He does protect his devotee. But Krishna's way of protecting is not always understandable through gross material eyes perception. We have to understand Krishna through our faith in his word and our faith in his mercy. And only through that can we actually understand Krishna's words as they are. Does that answer your question? So if Ladini's dancing with Krishna in the spiritual world, and we're down here trying to solve all the problems of ISKCON, you know, who's Krishna protected better? But he'll protect us too if we're just sincere. Anuttama Prabhu, would you like to enlighten us with your transcendental wisdom on this subject matter?
Well, you touched upon a topic earlier that it's often a sore one in devotees' hearts. And often we see actions causing and discussing.
About the communications department, you? Okay.
you used the term, then you explained it the proper way, and I wanted to maybe explore it a little bit more. You talked about one of the demons was representing the cheating guru. And you talked just before that, the context that we've been hurt and cheated so many times in our relationships and family relationships, friends, and then you see the devotees, society, they oftentimes put their faith in sometimes a spouse, senior godbrother, a temple authority, a sannyasi, unfortunately sometimes even a guru, and then that person either doesn't live up to their expectations or falls away themselves from their own commitment, and then sometimes that causes devotees to, like you said, Prabhupada said, I will never cheat like that. So we want to put our faith like that. And we understand there's a tendency to condition soul to put it in the wrong place and get hurt so many times. But sometimes even it seems we put it in the right place and we still get hurt. And oftentimes people, that becomes almost the last straw. You know, then I don't have faith in these people, or I don't have faith in the institution, or maybe I don't have faith in God. Because of that negative experience. And we can see in a practical way, earlier our understanding of that concept wasn't so clear. You just gave everything. And we did balance, just give everything as you understand it now. But people left their health, lost their health, people didn't take care of their kids, and the context I'm trying to address, people got hurt. So how do we, in a mature way, instruct devotees in these days, how you give everything, but maybe learn from our mistakes, and surrender entirely, but don't be foolish, and how they can overcome maybe if they feel they've been hurt, but still have faith. One of those too many answers.
Should I give a 2-minute answer? If a devotee is honestly and earnestly representing Krishna, Parampara, Prabhupada, then even if they have difficulty, we cannot say that they're cheating us. They were honestly trying to give us the right thing, and they are giving us the right thing, but they may not be able to, you know, always live up to that very high expectation. So in that sense, I believe we should simply, you know, be very grateful and sympathetic towards somebody who's having difficulty. I don't believe it's pleasing to Krishna to think of someone like that as a cheater, because they were giving us the right thing. They were outlets to the right current, and they tried their very best, perhaps, but due to some conditioning or offense or whatever, they may have had difficulty. So they are not cheating gurus. Within our society, yes, gurukul teachers, spiritual masters, temple presidents, sankirtan leaders sometimes, they act in immoral, unethical ways. But what's important is that we understand the philosophy. That's why Prabhupada very much encouraged us to read his books. Because if we understand his books carefully, we could remain stable in all situations. Because really, we are putting faith in Krishna. And Krishna is always perfect. And the current of his mercy through Parampara is always perfect. And if we have a deep appreciation and somewhat of a philosophical understanding of that, then no matter how many things go wrong in individual circumstances or individual people's lives, we understand that that doesn't in any way affect or phase the current of mercy that is there, that is always there and is available to us. Just like the electrical current Prabhupada is talking about here, the current from the powerhouse is the same. Yes? Now, if there's an outlet and we're getting that direct full current, we're benefiting from it. But if that outlet becomes dysfunctional, still, we have received the right current, and there are still outlets by which we can get the right current. Yes? Even if one becomes dysfunctional. We may lose access to the current through that particular medium, but the current is still there, and is still accessible, and is still available. It's just a matter of our sincerity to continue on. And that is a test of our own sincerity. You know, circumstances in this world they're definitely not going to be the way we want them to be. The world is like that. Yes, whoever we are, things are going to happen that are not what we want, not what we expect. There's going to be heartbreaking, disappointing situations no matter what we do. That's just the nature of the world. But if we have faith, and our faith is based on a philosophical understanding of the nature of Krishna, the nature of his mercy, the nature of parampara, then even if inconceivable difficulties come upon us individually and collectively, we know where the current is, and we will carry on. And we'll be grateful to anybody and everybody who has helped us on any level. And we'll pray for those who have had difficulties. But what is the value of making excuses and giving up our whole faith and going back into material life? We have the chance to go back to Godhead in this life. If we just connect ourselves to that current of the flow of divine grace. So whatever happens, we should just keep that connection. And we have seen some of the most glorious, empowered, and wonderful devotees in our society are people who have gone through exactly the same heartbreaking situations as people who have left the society altogether in a huff. What is the difference? One person goes through the same heartbreaking situation. One person goes through the same abusive situation as somebody else. One person just understands that, yes, this might be wrong, and this person might be wrong, and this situation might be wrong, but still, the connection's there. Why it has happened to me, what my karma is, I may not understand that so much, but I must be sincere to just not give up the name of Krishna, not give up the association of those devotees who are manifesting the current of bhakti properly. Keep in that association. Even if we have to change here and there individuals, but still we want to remain where that current is flowing. Through the name, through the Prabhupada's books, through good association, through the deities. Yes, and people who have been put through various situations have become empowered, realized, and glorious. And others have been through situations like that or even less and have just given up and gone deeply into the, using those things as an excuse to go deeply into the modes of material nature. Now we can't blame those persons either. We should be very sympathetic toward them. In many ways, they are justified to do that. Morally, ethically, they may be justified for just leaving the society and giving up the association and giving up the practice because of what they've gone through. But although on one level they may be justified, it's not helping them spiritually. They're being stifled spiritually. So it is a matter of sincerity. Does that answer the question? Honestly, or are you just saying? So yes, we should be grateful for anyone and everyone who has ever helped us. Because whatever anyone has given to help us in Krishna consciousness, that is eternal. And whatever mistakes a person makes, whatever deviant behavior a person does, that's all temporary. They're going to go through the karma and they're going to have to go through some karmic suffering of that, but ultimately what's left is the bhakti. Yes? So if we really want to be on the express highway back to Godhead, we should forgive all those persons who disappoint us, take shelter of those persons who are inspiring us, and be grateful to everyone who has ever given us help. And know that Krishna is always in his name. And we have so many examples of such great acharyas. We have Prabhupada's life and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's life and Gaur Kishore and Bhakti Vinod and Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas and six Goswamis and so many great devotees. Ladini, we were speaking the other day about Hayagriva Prabhu, did nice service, fell into deep pits of Maya. But in the end, Prabhupada just took him right back home, back to Godhead, and made his life perfect. He surrendered. There's so many examples. So we must take shelter of the lives of the great acharyas. We must take shelter of those devotees who even today are manifesting the proper characteristics. You see, when we put faith in someone, we're not only putting faith in that as in the person, but we're putting faith in the current that is manifesting through that person. Yes? And that we have to understand. Otherwise, we're personality cult. In many ways, ISKCON is a very safe movement. Because if we look at other spiritual movements where they're not in proper parampara, where they don't have peers who are, you know, smashing them when they do something wrong. I'm not saying they should, that we're always smashing in the right way. But there are so many yogi movements and other things, Christian movements, where there's just a charismatic leader, and they have so many scandals in their lives, and they still have millions of followers. Yes? I mean, there's people who have millions of followers worshiping him as God, who, you know, they've done abominable things. Yes? And I'm not going to mention names because we're standing in front of the deities, but so many of the very famous yogis and gurus and babas and everything, they've gone through the same kind of stuff as some of our leaders. But they're still worshipped. They're still followed. And there's so many justifications. Yes? Because, you know, all there is the disciples. Even though there might be heartaches, but the current is still flowing. And we should understand that Prabhupada said when we say his divine grace, it's not Prabhupada's divine grace. It's Krishna's divine grace flowing through Prabhupada in so perfectly. And we can put our complete faith in Prabhupada because it's flowing so perfectly. And if somebody who is a representative on one level or another, whether it's a husband or a wife or a temple commander or a Sankirtan leader or a Gurukul teacher or a guru or a GBC or president or whatever, as long as that current is flowing proper through that person's behavior and words, then we can take shelter there. But what are we really taking shelter of? Not just the body of the person. We're taking shelter of what's flowing through. And if the outlet of that becomes somehow or other disturbed, we still have faith in the essence of what we were taking faith in that person. That's parampara. That's the glory of parampara. It's indestructible, and it's perfect, the parampara system. Because we're taking shelter of that flow of perfect mercy. In Prabhupada's Vyas Puja to his guru, he said that there are myriad gurus. There's one guru that has taken myriad, many, many forms. Yes, and who is that guru? It's Krishna. It's Radharani. It's Radha and Krishna, the supreme gurus. And if we're following under a particular person and we make 60% spiritual advancement under that person's guidance, and then they cannot take us any further, we've made 60%, we're 60% back to the spiritual world. We should be grateful for that. If we have to reconnect to that same current, as far as, you know, individuals to go further, then we will. But why should we give up faith? Why should we give up hope? And why shouldn't we be grateful for where we've come from and where we are? These are some thoughts on this subject. So Prabhupada's mercy, he has given us entrance into this wonderful parampara system, where for those who are really sincere, you know, it's an infallible way of going back home, back to Godhead. Whatever happens in the unpredictable conditions of this world, and even those who fall temporarily, they're all going to go back to Godhead in due course of time. They may have to suffer a little extra and waste some time. But Krishna is very kind to his devotees. Krishna protects his devotees. He protects his devotees one way or another. Sometimes it's when a child is spanked by the parent. I remember my father used to tell me when I was naughty in Highland Park. My mother would tell him, your son has done like this, 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 this. And very rarely, he would take a little belt and fold it in half. And then he'd have tears in his eyes. And he'd say, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. And I'd say, this nonsense, what are you talking? It's not going to hurt me. I used to, what a nonsense, hurt. It's not going to hurt you, it's only going to hurt me. And he would never hit me hard. He would just put me on his lap and on my rear side, where you sit, he would just go, psh, psh, psh. It didn't actually hurt. It's just like the humiliation of the use. You'd cry. Then later on, I realized, actually, it did hurt him more than it hurt me. So I should just, for his sake, I should stop doing this nonsense things. But actually, when a father spanks his child, it's to protect the child, is it not? It's to teach the child a good lesson, and knowledge is protection. If you're educated, you're protected. If you're ignorant, you're not protected. So Krishna has his way of spanking us. But that spanking is ultimately to teach us good lessons, to protect us. And we have the free will of how fast we want to learn or how much time we want to waste. But the only thing keeping us between the spiritual world is just our unwillingness to remain sincere. Thank you very much, Anutama Prabhu, for being such an extraordinary example to our whole society. I will speak from my heart before he makes me stop. Many things happen. But when devotees like Anutama Prabhu, when I see their sincerity, their dedication, their willingness to just, you know, live with integrity and fight for integrity within our society, it brings hope and faith to my life. And therefore I am eternally indebted to Anutama Prabhu for this. Can you imagine the selfless, thankless, impossible task of being in charge of communications when so much stuff is going on? How to translate that to the world in a way that is honest and at the same time preserves the integrity of what we represent. But yet he's taken this impossible task on behalf of the whole society. And he does it with integrity and genuine feeling of devotion. He's everyone's well-wisher. I may not always understand everything, but I know in my heart. And we, on behalf of All devotees throughout the world, I place my head upon your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.